Good morning, and welcome to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Marisa DeMarco, a reporter here at KUNM. The state is consistently one of the worst when it comes to hungry kids, and the statistics aren't great for adults either. Roughly 1 in 4 people in New Mexico uses government food assistance. People who study nutrition and hunger say a bill moving through Congress right now might increase hunger in the state. It would tack on work requirements for some folks in the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. Plus, the state's been in legal trouble for 30 years for failing to enroll eligible people in the program, and that case is still dragging on in court. Have you applied for SNAP? How is the process? Or what do you think of requiring people to have jobs in order to get food assistance? Is our society obligated to make sure everyone is fed? How should we make it happen? We'll get into all of this and more over the course of the hour. Join the conversation by calling 277-5866. You can tweet us, too, with the hashtag #LetsTalkNM. Katie Cornell Poulter is a working mom who's pursuing a master's degree in social work. She works, she goes to school full time, and she's required to do what's called practicum, or unpaid hands-on training. She counts on SNAP and other financial assistance to make it all work. Good morning, Katie. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
So, first of all, tell us about practicum. How many hours of practicum are you expected to do every week to get your master's degree?
Well, for my practicum for an entire term, I'm expected to do 240 hours. So that's roughly 16 hours a week of unpaid work, but I work about 45 minutes from my home. So I also have to do that commute every day that I work as well. So.
And you're taking classes?
Yeah, I'm taking classes. Last semester I took 16 credits, and this term I'm taking 15. So it's quite a heavy load.
Right. And so what are the steps for applying for SNAP? What do you go through to get food benefits?
When I first applied for food stamps, you had to do it in person. I don't believe that they had it online yet. So you can do it online, but the process is it's pretty difficult. You'll provide them the information that they want, which is proof of income, proof of like if you're in school, so your school schedule, anything that relates to your income you have to provide. And a lot of times they'll say they didn't get it or they didn't receive it. So it takes a while. So that's the basic process.
And what are some of the strategies that you've used to try to figure that out?
I do a lot of research on my own. And so I've looked things up. And through my school, I've really gotten a lot of contacts and gotten to know people within the community and my instructors. So there's also New Mexico Law on Poverty. I've had to use them a lot as a resource in order to continue with SNAP benefits and to help me out.
Yeah, you've had to reach out for legal help.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I haven't gotten the benefits that I need every month on time many, many times, and that's been a huge It's really difficult when I'm in school and I can't go to the office and try to meet with someone all day long. It's pretty hard.
Yeah, and so you applied for SNAP, you got your SNAP, and then you're expected to renew it every so often, right? You have to go through the process again every, 6 months?
Yeah, every 6 months, but technically it's about like every 4 to 5 months that I get a letter because they're kind of letting you know, hey, you're going to need to renew. You have until this date to do it. And so it feels like you're renewing 3 times a year, even though it's technically twice. But it's a long, drawn-out process.
And have there been long periods of time where you didn't have those benefits that you were counting on?
Yeah, there have been. So let me think. Okay, so last Thanksgiving, I renewed. It was my renewal period. And so the letter asked for all my proof of everything, and I turned that in. And I was at the grocery store. This is probably about a couple days before the main holiday. I was getting kind of worried because I hadn't heard from anybody. So I was waiting for my phone interview because you also have to do a phone interview or an in-office interview. And so I was waiting by my phone. My appointment was supposed to be at 4. I was waiting by my phone at 3. And I was ready to go to the store. I didn't have any food for Thanksgiving or anything in the fridge yet. And so I was waiting for the phone call, and nobody called. And so I'm like, okay, it's 4:30. So I called the office, and no one answered. Nobody answered at first. Then I called back again, and they told me that they had transferred my case to a different county. And I was trying to figure out why, and they basically said just there was the caseload was really heavy. And I said, okay, well, can I get someone to call me? Because I kind of need to get this taken care of before, you know, the long weekend. So I ended up having to call New Mexico Law and Poverty and contact Sovereign. And she has always helped me out. And as soon as I called her, she took care of it. She called someone over there, and it just took a while. The money was on my card, because at that point I was at the store waiting to get food, and I checked my balance, and I had the money on there right away for food. But to get that phone interview, I don't think I got it until a month or 2 months later, and it took many phone calls to get someone to actually call me.
Right.
So, and yeah. If I didn't get that interview, then I would be cut off. So, of food stamps.
Right. Stephanie Olivas works for AmeriCorps, specifically for Food Corps, which is focused on healthy foods in school and child nutrition. And you're also a mom. Good morning, Stephanie.
Good morning.
So, is this story that Katie's telling, is this familiar to you?
Yeah, it definitely is.
So what's been your experience as you've tried to access food assistance?
Last year, it was my first time. I've been privileged enough not to have to try and get my food stamps thus far. But last year was my first time. And I wasn't able to get it for a whole year. There were times when I gave up. There were times when maybe I missed a couple steps. But I tried and tried again. As a Food Corps service member, they provide us with all the materials we need to present to the workers at the food stamps office to say that, you know, our stipends can be counted as income and we're below the levels, and stating their status as, you know, nonprofit. And even during our orientations, they provide service members trainings that they need to navigate the system. So I had everything I needed to do that. And over, I did it all online. I was a first-time mom working full-time, and that was pretty convenient for me until, you know, I ran into the same barriers of, oh, we didn't get that form. We need this additional thing. And every time, I mean, I had to re-upload all of my forms, my pay stubs, the AmeriCorps forms, my proof of pregnancy, because I was pregnant at the time, my doctor's notes, all this stuff, at least like 5 times.
Yeah. And so you were pregnant at the time. Mm-hmm. Did this create like additional worry for you as you're trying to get food and nutrition?
Yeah, it definitely is. You know, nutrition starts for every human being in the womb. and not having access to food in general, not having the money that I needed for food in general, but specifically fresh fruits and vegetables. You know, we have a lot of really great programs for SNAP recipients who are trying to buy fresh fruits and vegetables. We have the Double Up Food Bucks program. So if I did have those, I would have been able to get, you know, my $2 for $1 on my fresh fruits and vegetables. Luckily, I have an amazing support system who was able to have my back during those times and help me, you know, help meet my needs. But not everybody has that. But for sure, you know, just thinking about my own health and the health of, you know, my baby, because, you know, they take extra out of you and they need that extra to grow. So it was definitely frustrating and worrisome when I couldn't, you know, eat what I needed to.
We got an email comment from Jason. He's a SNAP recipient, and he says that he's had interruptions in his benefits at least 2 times per year, and the state doesn't really ever provide a reason, and then he just doesn't have that money for food for a month. As you, Katie, and Stephanie are going through this process, did you ever hear from the state about what was going on? Did you get updates about, you know, where your case was, or, I mean, what's the situation like?
No, I didn't hear anything. I would call supervisors, I would call the office of the ISD office, and no one would return my phone call. I would probably call in at least 5 times in a row to even try to get someone on the phone, and when they did get someone on the phone, they would say they'd email the supervisor. And I wouldn't hear anything back. And so every time I would have to call New Mexico Law and Poverty. And it's just an injustice to people within our community. And I'm really happy and lucky that I have the resources that I have as well. But I used to do work study at Highlands, and so I was getting paid. I was getting paid minimum wage, 20 hours a week, and my food stamps went down a lot less, probably $50, which for being a single parent, that's a lot of money a month. When I quit being a work study student, I had put in a change report to say that I no longer was working, and so I was hoping my food stamps would go back up and my other benefits, and they didn't. So long story short, it took about 6 months for them to reimburse me for all that back pay. And during that time, it was really stressful. And there's a lot of times you'll get those letters saying, you're going to be cut off if you don't do this. And then you comply and you do what they ask. And thank goodness for New Mexico Law and Poverty. That's all I can say.
We're going to take a call now from Eric in Santa Fe. Good morning, Eric.
Hi, good morning.
What's your experience, Eric?
Thanks for taking my call. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Well, I have a little bit different perspective on the issue than the previous callers who I heard mention that they had dealt with the SNAP program through either the phone or the computer. I have only gone in person. I'm 60 years old. I'm homeless. I'm Mexican-American. And I have only gone into the office in person to avoid any kind of problem. And my observation over the years, because I'm 60 and I've had problems finding employment, is that being in the office physically, many of the recipients and applicants who I find in the office are Mexican and illegal. I'm Mexican, remember? Yes, I'm Mexicano. I lived in Mexico for 25 years. My mother's Mexican. I'm American. So I'm not saying this from any kind of perspective other than a factual assessment of personal experience over a period of 3 years. This year, when I had to renew, which was, I think, about 2 months ago, I went into the office. It was completely empty. And the procedure was a little bit more strict. And I had to demand that I had my assessment done by a service provider who are in there. They have counselors in there. And I went to the counselor, and they were able to initiate my renewal while I was there present. But I did have to struggle quite a bit to have that option and that possibility. But the office was empty, literally empty. And this is the first time that I've gone in a year, or 6 months rather, where I've ever seen so few people. So I'm assuming that because of the new constrictions and threats, I guess, that the administration in Washington is putting into place, that there are less people who are willing to go and expose themselves. The other thing is, I guess the main
Hey, Eric, I'm going to cut you off right there, but thank you very much for your call. Real quick, Sovereign Hager is the managing attorney for the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty. Good morning, Sovereign.
Good morning.
The laws are complicated around mixed status families. What do you know about what Eric's talking about here?
Definitely. So federal law is really clear that only people who are U.S. citizens and in eligible immigration statuses can get SNAP benefits. So there's absolutely no one who's undocumented in this country that is eligible for SNAP and can get SNAP. That's not the case. We do know that, a very small percentage of people on SNAP are non-citizens. And that's because folks, even though they may be eligible and they're non-citizens, we know that they use benefits at a much lower rate than U.S. citizens.
All right. We're talking about how the state of New Mexico handles delivering food assistance to New Mexicans. What needs to change? Have you ever had problems getting SNAP benefits? And what was that like? What did it mean for you and your family? Give us a call at 277-5866. Tweet us with the hashtag Let's Talk NM. We're going to take a quick break.
Libra's Luggage carries all major brands of luggage, business cases, handbags, and travel accessories. Libra's annual tent event is going on this week. Libra's Luggage on Manal at Georgia is a valued supporter of KUNM.
The law firm of Rothstein Donatelli is committed to supporting KUNM. Since 1976, the firm has litigated Native American law, criminal defense, wrongful death, and civil rights in New Mexico and nationwide. Info at rothsteinlaw.com.
Politics, environment, robots, asteroids, trains, fractals, music, jokes, birthdays, call-ins, giveaways, alligators.
Alligators?
Where?
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm your host, Marisa DeMarco. We are talking about SNAP benefits today, food, nutrition, and hunger in New Mexico. Stephanie Olivas, you work in food justice, and you also have had experiences trying to access SNAP benefits. How do those two experiences inform each other?
excuse me. So, sorry. I just want to comment on the last caller's comment, because it does play a huge part in this conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Racism has a huge play in how the system works and what people perceive it as. And so I believe he was making a comment on all the workers being illegal immigrants, and maybe that's why he didn't get his stamps, which is probably not true. But you know, we have a lot of these perceptions of the welfare queen, which is usually people of color, which is not true. You know, I'm a young woman of color, I identify as Chicana. I'm a student, I'm an activist, you know, not the typical view that folks would have of a brown person who's receiving food stamps. And so I think that's why it's so important that in the work of the community and grassroots work around accessing food stamps and other benefits and partnering with the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, is that we really try to shift the focus away from the individual recipients and the workers who are in the field, because really it is a systematic problem. And that's where we took the case. It was a couple years ago now, right, that we did the town hall to give the community opportunity to have a fair input on the issue. And the theme was fight hunger, not the hungry. So when we're making these comments about recipients and even the people who work in the offices, you know, it's a systematic problem. And I think, What was your question about going hand in hand about being working in the field? And
you know, this is your work too, right?
Yeah.
So this is in part it's your personal life or your home life where you have to apply for food assistance, but also this is the field that you work in. And I'm just wondering if going through the process of applying for food assistance gave you any insight into your job, or if your job gave you insight into that process, right?
Well, I think my job definitely did give me insight into that process. It definitely helped me stick it through and dealing with the offices and the calls. And, you know, I knew it wasn't them. I knew it's a systematic problem. And so that definitely gave me the power to get through that. I think having those experiences and not being able to access my benefits definitely grounded me more in the work that I do with young people around the city. I work specifically mostly in the International District, where we see, you know, some of the highest rates of poverty and food insecurity and food deserts and all these things. And, you know, the schools that I work with are 100% free and reduced lunch. And I know that status is impacted a lot by how many of the families receive benefits. So if that's affected, that, you know, the amount of families that get benefits, then it could potentially affect, you know, how many free lunches a school can give. And we know that, you know, sometimes students, that's the only meal they're getting is in school, and it's not a very good quality, but sometimes it's the only thing they have because they have trouble at home, you know.
And I think a lot of, you know, we're talking about the stigmas surrounding, you know, receiving food benefits. And I think something, you know, especially like legislatively, gets talked about work requirements. I think something that gets lost is that a lot of people, most people in SNAP are working people already, like yourself and like Katie, these are people who have jobs, you know. All right. Sovereign Hager, 30 years ago, another single working mom had her work hours cut, used up her savings, and then turned to the state for help. After struggling with the system for weeks, she became part of a class action lawsuit against the state. You're the managing attorney for the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, and you're working on this case against the state still 30 years later. Good morning, Sovereign.
Good morning.
So how long have you personally been working on this case?
I've been working on this case for over 5 years now, and it's been ongoing for decades, as you mentioned. And it's a really basic what this case is about, and it's just about families getting the food and medical assistance that they're eligible for on time and the state doing its job.
And so what's taking so long? Why is this 3 decades now?
This is something that the court wants to know as well. Basically, the state hasn't taken the steps it needs to process applications timely and do them according to the law. So, you know, you heard how folks were asked for paperwork that wasn't necessary or that they'd already turned in. That is exactly the situation that Deborah Hatton Gonzalez, the single mom you mentioned 30 years ago, was in. She had turned in paperwork and her application went unprocessed and she did not have enough food to eat. In fact, it was around Easter time and she and her kids were going to egg hunts to get eggs to eat because the consequences of not getting your benefits are dire. And those problems persist today, you know, when workers don't have the tools they need because of the way the program is administered. And what the court has found is that the higher leaders at the Human Services Department don't have the skills and knowledge or capacity to effectively administer these programs and give the workers the tools they need to get folks the benefits, you know, which is how people in our community eat.
Miles Conway is here this morning as well. You're the spokesperson for the state's Public Service Employees Union. Good morning, Miles.
Good morning. Good morning.
So, you know, as part of this case, there are some improvements required of how the state handles applications. Have you seen some improvements at the Income Support Division?
I think we've seen a rising wave of impending improvements. And I think the federal court has ordered some pretty major improvements to the system. But I'm glad, you know, our colleague here brought up the question of the system, of how the system of delivering food aid to people that need it and medical aid is operating at this point. You know, there is a human component here. You know, certainly the state struggles under huge vacancies for income support division, the caseworkers, the human being that you go to and you either face to face or talk on the phone. But there is also a computer system that I think the state has spent upwards of $120 million of under this administration. And it doesn't work. It still doesn't work. It didn't work in Kentucky. It didn't work in Michigan. It didn't work in a bunch of states where they implemented it. And so we continue to throw money at that thing. It was and it is the system we'll live with. But when you know, your callers, our guests here in studio, folks out there that are struggling to navigate this system by calling in or getting on a computer. I mean, first of all, how many folks that are in struggling with poverty have access to that computer or that smartphone? So there's major breakdowns in some of those automated systems that the workers are not responsible for, that the family assistant analysts, the folks that we represent in AFSCME, and we are hardworking folks, and they are dedicated to getting the benefits delivered to the people that that need them and have a right to them.
We're going to continue talking about that. We are taking your calls today. That number is 277-5866. We have an email comment from Sarah. She says she works at a community college and that SNAP benefits are critical for students. And the difference between meeting basic needs and scrambling to make ends meet on a regular basis. We're talking about access to food assistance in New Mexico, including a 3-decade lawsuit against the state. And we're also talking about the Farm Bill Congress is considering in D.C. You can go to our website, KUNM.org, to see statements from New Mexico's congressional delegation, their positions on SNAP and the Farm Bill. New Mexico has the second highest unemployment rate in the country. What does that mean for folks who might need to get a job in order to keep SNAP benefits down the line? Or maybe you already have a job and you still need SNAP help on top of your income. Call 277-5866 and join the conversation. You can also email letstalk@kunm.org. Sovereign, whistleblowers have been a big part of this case against the state. And what are some of the things that we learned from workers at the Income Support Division?
Well, what we've learned is because, you know, we saw that there is really this unifying value of wanting to make sure that people have enough to eat. And really brave workers at the Income Support Division came forward because they had reported a problem to management that was not being addressed. So they came forward to us and in court about a statewide practice of changing applications, specifically the income in the case, to make it look like a family was not in emergency need of food assistance. You know, under law, if you have less than $150 in the bank or your housing costs are higher than your monthly income, you are entitled to get food benefits within 7 days. And that's critical because you can't wait when you're hungry. In order to circumvent that requirement and make the state look like it was performing higher, there were directives given to workers to add income into cases. And, you know, so brave to come forward with that. Such important information. Really shameful that it went on for a long time.
I want to recap that really mm-hmm. quick, because sometimes I think we say it and people don't understand what we're saying. So somebody goes in to Income Support Division.
Goes in.
Okay, no, I'm saying like a person who needs mm-hmm. SNAP benefits. They right. go in. They you fill out an application. On this application, it says, how much money do you have in the bank, right? What do you make at your job? And you put in those numbers and you give it to a worker. And what was happening, the whistleblowers said, is that after you submitted that paperwork, they were instructed by their bosses to go back in and change your numbers, to change what you said that you had in the bank, to change what your income was. And the reason that this was done, according to whistleblowers and according to people in the case, was so that they didn't have to provide emergency food aid, which is required under the law. They'd have to get that to that person within 7 days if they were in dire enough circumstances, right?
That's right. And instead, so not only, you know, is this a way to make it look like the state's performing better because it looks like those applications were timely processed. You know, what's really going on there is the family does not get the benefits within 7 days and the case languishes And the family has to turn in more paperwork in order to get the case finally processed by the deadline the state has falsely made it look like exists, which is at 30 days. And, you know, this happened to many, many people.
Stephanie, as you're listening to news of this case, and I know you're probably also familiar with it, what does it make you think about your own experiences trying to get food assistance?
Well, when I first tried 2 years ago was my first time trying, like I talked about earlier. I got my emergency food stamps and I said, oh, wow, that's amazing. This is really working. They must really be on top of it after they got in trouble. And then I thought I was good after that. And then I didn't get anything else for the rest of that time, for the rest of that year. But when I called and I was wondering and I said, what happened? You know, why didn't I get them this next month? And they're like, oh, well, we were waiting on this form and you never sent it in. Oh, sorry. Yeah, I forgot what I was going to say. Go ahead.
Oh, no, that's okay. We got a Twitter comment from Waylon. He says we need business-friendly leaders. He says rather than death by taxes for hardworking New Mexicans, he wants to see everyone put to work. If they can't get a job, people should do community service every week. So one of the things that's moving through Congress right now is a version of the Farm Bill, which would increase work requirements for folks enrolled in the SNAP program. The Farm Bill is big and covers agricultural and food policy in the U.S. and is passed every 5 years or so. Alyssa Barnes is the Director of Community Initiatives at Roadrunner Food Bank, which is the largest in the state. Good morning, Alyssa.
Good morning.
You watched the Farm Bill really carefully. Does anything about this one seem special or different to you?
Well, the Farm Bill gives us anxiety every time it comes up for reauthorization, and this year is particularly scary, as one of the Feeding America food banks in the network. We're following closely the information that Feeding America is keeping tabs on as well, and there's there are a lot of components to the Farm Bill, and it is one of those big, very complicated, multifaceted bills that affects a lot of things. And there are a number of different federal nutrition programs that are affected by the Farm Bill. There's commodities, there's the SNAP program, there's nutrition education, there's senior-specific commodities. I mean, it just kind of goes on and on. And in addition to that, there are components of the Farm Bill that also help provide subsidies for agriculture. So it's this kind of two multifaceted, protects farmers and helps feed the hungry. And the proposed changes to the SNAP program and this upcoming Farm Bill are where we're really focusing our attentions as a nationwide network, because the changes are, can at least in the first draft, are a little bit scary.
Yeah, and the feds provide SNAP dollars, so that's not New Mexico money. And it's usually around $650 million a year here in New Mexico. Do you think requiring people who use SNAP to work or work more saves taxpayers money?
No. And it's very complicated when you talk about work requirements for individuals who are receiving SNAP. There are already some work requirements under the ABOD part of the bill, part of the SNAP program. And every time we talk about that, it changes and they want to expand and have more people either doing community service or finding jobs. And when you talk about New Mexico in particular, you had mentioned earlier that we are still second highest in the nation for unemployment. And just having people go to work is not as simple as just, well, we'll just have them go to work. You have to have jobs for them to go to work into. They have to have skills. They have to be able-bodied in a way that is beyond just the technical requirement of not disabled. But if you're hungry and not sure where your next meal is going to come from, I'm not sure how you're supposed to go to work and focus and do a good job throughout the day. So I don't think that is the solution to our SNAP situation.
Sovereign, the state has also in the past tried to put additional work requirements in place. What do you think that would mean for the whole system when ISD has problems kind of behind the scenes already?
Right. So exactly what is proposed in the Farm Bill has been proposed by Governor Martinez and was attempted to be implemented. And we know exactly what that means here in New Mexico. it means that folks are penalized for being unemployed. And research shows that being required to do unpaid work hours does not help you find a job, does not increase earnings. SNAP itself is a really powerful work support. First of all, more than 48% of families on SNAP include working adults. The rest are people who are disabled or children, can't work. So the vast majority of people on SNAP that can work do. And it's a huge boon for our economy. That $650 million you mentioned in federal benefits are spent in our local food systems all over the state. Over 1,600 retailers accept SNAP benefits. That creates jobs, both in our agricultural industry and in our retail industry. And it has a multiplier effect. Every dollar spent in SNAP generates $1.70 in economic activity. So not only are families eating, you know, more than 35% of our very young children are relying on SNAP to eat every day, but it's generating jobs and it's stimulus in our economy. And the idea that you would cut that to very low-income people on the heels of a tax plan, you know, passed by Congress that gave assistance to corporations and wealthy people, no strings attached, is unconscionable. And, people should contact members of Congress and voice their opposition. This plan was tried in New Mexico. It was an administrative disaster. It resulted in hungry people, eligible people being cut off. And a federal court stopped the state from doing it once. A state court judge stopped the state from implementing these requirements another time. We absolutely can't administer them. And even if we could, it wouldn't help.
All right. We're talking about access to food assistance or SNAP in the state today. Roughly one in four people in New Mexico uses food assistance. What do you think about possible federal cuts to the program? Give us a call, 277-5866. This is Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Marisa DeMarco. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back.
Who knows what will happen to steel prices in the near future? This may be the best time ever to donate that unwanted vehicle to KUNM. Even if it's not running, find out if your car or truck or RV or farm equipment is still a valuable donation to KUNM. Go to KUNM.org and pull down Donate Your Vehicle under the Support tab. Or to ask your questions by phone, call 888-KUNM-CAR. That's 888-586-6227.
The Trump administration says tribes are not exempt from Medicaid work requirements, calling it illegal preferential treatment based on race. Politico and several other news outlets talked to tribal officials worried about an attack on sovereignty. Also, the Navajo Times tackled financial literacy. We'll talk with reporters on these topics and more on our news roundup. On the next, Native America Calling.
Weekday mornings at 11 on KUNM.
Welcome back to Let's Talk New Mexico. I'm Marisa DeMarco. We're talking about food assistance and nutrition in New Mexico today. On the phone, we have State Senator Pat Woods. Good morning, Senator.
Good morning.
So you're a Republican from Broadview, New Mexico, representing Curry, Quay, and Union counties, and you carried a measure in the 2018 legislative session earlier this year that would have added work requirements for people who use SNAP in New Mexico. Why did you bring that measure?
Well, I brought a bill that would require people, able-bodied people without dependents that had no physical problems, to work for 20 hours a week or volunteer for 20 hours a week or look for work or go to school.
Yeah.
Or they would be eligible for SNAP in New Mexico.
And what prompted you to bring that bill?
What prompted me was I think that the state of New Mexico was pretty hypocritical when they spend millions of dollars for economic development, trying to find places for people to go to work in the state of New Mexico, and then not release people from the SNAP program to do that work. We are so afraid in these programs that if we make $1 too many, that we will not be able to receive those benefits. And we've trapped some of these people into those programs. And so it sounds reasonable to me if you are able-bodied, have no dependents. Exactly what are you doing all day?
What do you mean by trapped, Senator?
If you could volunteer for work, or if you could volunteer at your local church or synagogue to help them, why would that be an imposition?
So the Legislative Finance Committee estimated in the write-up of your bill that it would cost $2.4 million to hire a contractor and run this program, and another $250,000 to track compliance, and another $50,000 to hire staff. Do you think it would save money in the long run?
Oh, I'm not talking about the saving of money. I'm not talking about taking people off of the program. I'm talking about giving them the opportunity to better themselves.
Miles, I'm going to go to you as a representative of the workers' union. What do you think about these proposals to add this kind of work requirement component, and how would it be administered in the Income Support Division?
Well, let me say to Representative Woods on the phone, I mean, he, you know, there might be some great industry going on in his county that people haven't heard of where these jobs are accessible. But I think one of the challenges is we're a big state. We have a lot of different demographics in our counties. There, if you're somewhere north of Gallup, maybe on the Navajo Nation, and you are told you need to go find a job, where are you going? You know, what job are you finding? What programs are in place to support such a program? I think it's also interesting that the representative's own county income support division office, is it like basically at a skeleton staff? They've moved all those staff to other areas so they can deal with higher caseloads in other offices. So assuming you got to go into the income support division office and find some work, if you're in Curry County, you're in a bad situation, because there's not going to be a lot of workers there for you to contact.
What do you think about what Miles is saying here, Senator Woods?
So there's no volunteer jobs anywhere in the state. There's no place for someone to volunteer to pick up trash along the highways, to go out and help a neighbor, to deliver some of the commodities from your food banks.
Well,
there's no volunteer work anywhere.
Well, I think they're out there, Senator. Certainly, the Income Support Division staff would want to be enabled with a list of where they could be sending these folks to do these volunteer opportunities. I think that is certainly the cart that should not have come before the horse.
Listeners, what do you think about more work or volunteer requirements for people receiving food assistance? Give us a call, 277-5866. Senator Woods, I didn't mean to cut you off. What are you saying over there?
Well, I could very well put that in the legislation that we have to have a list of volunteer jobs for these people.
Okay. Well, and is this something that you intend to bring to the legislature again?
Yes, I plan to bring it again. Although, if it's in the federal farm bill, in federal law, then New Mexico will have to follow it already. So I probably would be not necessary for me to bring it.
Do you worry at all that this could create more hunger in the counties that you represent?
Okay, let's see. I'm asking able-bodied people that have no dependents, that have no physical reason not to be able to work, to go to work, to do volunteer work, go to school to better themselves. And you're asking me if that will cause them to be more hunger?
Well, I mean, I think some of the things we've been talking about here today is that a lot of people who make use of SNAP, and the statistics show this, are already people who are going to school, who are going to work, and that there have been problems historically in the state with administering the program. So it just creates a situation where potentially it would be hard to prove that you're working, hard to prove that you're volunteering, and create more burden for workers than on the system? And I guess that's the question that I'm trying to put to you about whether you have an idea about how that could be worked around.
So you're asking me how to administratively make the program work?
Sure, or if you've considered those issues as within your bill.
See, when you write a law, someone else sets up, the executive branch is the one that sets up the requirements to carry out that law. So I guess a governor, the executive branch, would have to figure out how to do that.
All right, great. Well, hang on the line with us, Senator. Alyssa, what happens when SNAP doesn't fully meet all of people's needs for help with food?
Well, they end up in food lines all across the state. And as a statewide network, our 500-plus partners serve 70,000 New Mexicans a week. We distribute at Roadrunner Food Bank 34 million pounds a year across the state. And even with that, the SNAP program provides 12 meals for every meal provided by the entire Feeding America network of food banks. We have 200 partner food banks across the country. And if SNAP benefits are cut or it's harder to access, then there's no way that the food bank network can take care of that gap on our own. The SNAP program is already providing 12 meals to our one, and we do billions of pounds between the 200 food banks. So when people can't get SNAP or when SNAP isn't enough, which is most of the time, they turn to the charitable sector. And hunger is pervasive in our country, and we can argue about the reason for that all we want. But the reality is this is not something that can be solved by the charitable sector alone. It has to have the public sector and the private sector. It has to be everyone. And so, you know, the concern with the Farm Bill is if you cut those federal nutrition programs, I don't know who's going to pick up all that slack.
We have a lot of calls coming in. Let's take this one from Shadow Amudo. Good morning, Shadow.
Hi, this is Shell from Embudo, and I wanted to ask the senator, he wants people to work 20 hours a week volunteering, which is about 80 hours a month at $180 for your average SNAP benefit. That comes out to $2.25 an hour. Does he think it's really fair to ask people to work for a wage?
I'm sorry, we missed the end of that. Does he think it's fair for people?
Is it really fair to ask people to work for a wage of $2.25 an hour for their SNAP benefits?
Senator Woods?
Is it fair to ask people to work for food? That's the question that's being asked me. I say yes. I think it's fair for people to work for food. I think that's one of the benefits that the gentleman that is at the grocery store that is stocking the shelves, he is working for food. The gentleman that's at the gas station watching those pumps, he is working for food. I think it's a good idea for people to work for food.
All right. Andres from Rio Arriba County. Good morning, Andres.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
I can.
Okay, yeah. Again, I've been in education for about 35 years, recently retired, and I come from a poor area, you know, Rio Arriba County, and I can see where the senator has, you know, his heart in the right, you know, in the right place and wanting to get these folks, you know, off the rolls, welfare rolls or food stamp rolls, whatever. But on the other side of the coin, you know, a lot of times we do have a lot of folks that might want to be, you know, in the workforce or volunteer force. A lot of times, you know, they don't have transportation. You know, they're down in the gutter. And I think if the government would provide some type of busing systems to different places, for example, schools for tutorings, help kids with reading, you know, cafeteria work, like you said, churches. I'm giving them some ideas. There's always work. Schools always need help. always, you know, in the cleaning and the cafeteria work and assisting other kids with reading problems, all kinds of work in education, because we either pay now or we're going to pay later. Again, a lot of these folks are down in the gutters. They need, you know, the state needs to step up and say, you know, we're going to start this program and transport these people that might have transportation problems. You know, for a lot of folks that are working and stuff, it's not an issue. But, you know, a lot of folks, they're really down in the gutter, and these food programs or assistances are all they have. I see it every single day here in Española. I was talking to a guy the other day. I see him frequently at Taco Bell, and I told him, you know, you should try to get a job either at Wendy's, wherever. And as I told him, I gave him the example that the senator gave. I said the same effort that they put to get to work and be there is the same effort that everybody has to put to try to. But it's kind of difficult to get out of the gutter. But I think once they get out of the gutter and they can start feeling self-sufficient and worthy of a lot of these folks. There's another individual.
All right. Thank you, Andres. I'm sorry to cut you off. We have a bunch of calls coming in right now. John from Santa Fe. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
What's your comment or question for us today?
I just wanted the senator to respond to the idea that having people work for food is a form of slavery. We have a history in New Mexico of people of color being forced into slavery. It seems to me that it's a medieval kind of feudal concept to put people to work for them to get their food. I don't think that people who make choices like attorneys and governors about how to do their careers and what kind of jobs, they're allowed ethical choices in the work that they do. And I think that what the governor's proposing is a kind of medieval slavery. Thank you.
Senator?
I love it. Slavery. Let me ask you something. When the nomadic Indians came across this country, and they were living the life of Riley, because they were moving across the country and they was harvesting food as they went, and their main job in life was food. Now you're telling me that it's slavery if you have to work for food. I don't go for that. No, ma'am.
Marta from Albuquerque. We've got really little bit of time. What's your comment or question for us?
Okay, well, responding to what the senator just said, as an anthropologist, first of all, Indians were in a completely different economic system. We are in a capitalist one. So his point is moot. Secondly, you're expecting folks to have money to go to school and money to have transportation to go volunteer and money to have jobs to work 20 hours a week. And that is unfair, and it is disrespectful to people's conditions.
Marta, thank you so much. We have a lot of calls here at the end of the hour, and if you want to, you can send us an email, letstalk@kunm.org, and we will hear your ideas and post them online. We're coming to the end of the hour today, and I know there's so much more to say, but we're going to take this topic on again on May 10th. Thank you for joining us today on Let's Talk New Mexico. Stephanie Olivas of Food Corps, Katie Cornell Pulter, who studying social work, Sovereign Hager of the New Mexico Center on Law and Poverty, Alyssa Barnes of Roadrunner Food Bank, Miles Conway of the Public Employees Union. Thanks, everyone. If you missed any of our program, or if you'd like to share it with friends, the audio of this show will be posted to our website, kunm.org, where you can also find previous shows. Join us again in 2 weeks when we continue this conversation. Thanks to Marino Spencer, our engineer today. Sarah Trujillo screened your calls. Victor Onimole live tweeted the show. And Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Marisa DeMarco. This is KUNM.